This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
Listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
Tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
You can't start a show.
I know. It's tragic.
Welcome to the Bates Motel After Buzz After Show.
Four people just committed suicide in Spokane.
Oh, God. That was...
In fairness, they were going to anyway. We just moved along.
All right. Welcome to the After Buzz Bates Motel After Show. That is You Belong to Me or...
Tonight you belong to me.
I think that one's from The Jerk. I think that's Steve Martin and Bernadette Peters. That's the one we can find.
And a ukulele.
But that is the song sung by Caleb and Norma at the piano, and also very creepily played by, you know, why Norman touched his mother's bum or side in a very weird, creepy way, because that's what weird, creepy guys do. I'm Joe Braswell. Thank you for joining us. We're here talking Bates Motel on the phone. I have the lovely Dua Casey. Dua, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I thought you were going to say that I was Olivia Cook. I was all ready for my Olivia Cook accent.
Oh, no. That's only for Flippo. I'll do the thing.
He's mean.
But also, in studio, as you can see on YouTube, I'm joined by Nando Velasquez.
Yes, hi, everybody. Welcome.
And that's a nice shirt and a nice haircut. Nando's looking pretty spiffy today, ladies.
He is.
Thank you.
Looks like he lives indoors. It's wonderful.
Nando got all did up for you, Dua. You're not even here.
I did. Thanks, Dua.
He smells pretty, too.
And we also have Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to be here with you guys.
It's lovely to have you, Joe.
You're very welcome.
Joe was not here last week in person, but he sure as hell was at the Universal back lot to meet Vera Farmiga. But we'll talk about that later.
I weren't going to miss that.
We did get a visit on the lot last week, as some of you may or may not know from our social media feeds. I think in News and Gossip we'll try to chat a little bit about that, because it was a lot of fun. We got to meet, got a long, nice chat with Carrie Aaron, and talked a little bit to Carlton Cuse, and talked a little bit to Vera, and it was wonderful. It was a wonderful time.
Yeah, thanks to our friends over at Universal TV and Universal Studios for setting that up.
Yes. But let's talk tonight about The Last Supper. Episode number 7. Mm-hmm. This is an episode that our friend Nestor Carbonell has sort of teased as the episode that we'll find out a lot more about Romero and his motivations and his past. And although we didn't find out as much as I wanted to find out, Dua Casey, we did find out a little bit. I mean, what did you think of this episode, Dua? I'll start with you.
I thought this episode was really great and almost bittersweet. I mean, I think that you could tell by the end of the episode that this was probably as good as it's going to get. I think it's all downhill from here. And I think that this was, you know, it was sweet. It was sweet to see The Last Supper. I thought that they had a really good amount of suspenseful, you know, horror in it with the scene with the doctor that we'll get into later. I think that, you know, they started, I love the scene at the kitchen with Dylan when they were when he was trying to explain to Norma exactly what Norma was going through.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, it was great. Joe, what did you think?
I loved it. I always love it, though, so it really doesn't surprise me. I just think this show always hits with the middle of the bat. I loved it. I loved the moment. My favorite moment is when Dylan is looking at Norma and Caleb playing on the piano, and you see that moment of just like watching mom and dad be happy together. And we all know as an audience just how twisted and creepy and screwed up this is, and yet the moment was still sweet. And I enjoyed this episode tremendously. So much good stuff and so much Romero fun.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dua said a little bit into this, but I feel the same way. That with the title The Last Supper, you know, I expect things to probably go downhill to take a real big turn from here. And I thought it was a really nice ending. I love that scene with Caleb and Norma. And, you know, this was the exact thing that Emma and Dylan both wanted. They wanted to be part of a family.
Yeah.
So again, in a really creepy way.
I also love that he overplayed it. I love that he overplayed it. You know, he came with that weird creepy toast. Like,
with Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Add a berry blast off for your day with the new Berry Pebbles. A berry twist on a classic breakfast. Perfect for giving those growing minds a blast of creativity. With the new Berry Way to Pebbles. Yabba dabba do you with Berry Pebbles. Head to postpebblescereal.com to learn more. Yabba dabba do and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements. Copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
He just, yeah, like he couldn't stay in the zone. He's just like, and I'm too crazy, you know.
Well, it's true. And you know, look, it's not just Emma and Dylan, right? And it's what Caleb's always wanted as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a real sweet moment. And maybe we don't know this because he's shrouded in goddamn mystery, but maybe what Romero may want. Now we know a little bit more about Romero.
Now we know him. I think everybody, you know, kind of seems to be lacking from some type of connection.
Right.
And I think that's why we've made comments before on the physical touch that we see. And we saw a couple of examples even in this episode with Norma touching James Finnegan in front of Norman.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned Norman touching Norma.
Yeah.
Yeah. All these little examples of connection. And I think ultimately that's what all these characters at the end, at the dinner table, really want. They want a family, they want a connection, they want a lover, they want whatever it is, but they're all there.
Right.
And I think it's a very interesting part of that story.
So let's talk about all these sort of, all these other bits that sort of lead up to the two centerpieces of the story. I would say the centerpiece of this story, I mean the moment of the story is the confrontation in the basement between Doc and Norman. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. And also the supper itself. But the stuff leading up to that, you know, let's start with Norma. Norma's back. And she's, you know, really surprised why everyone is making such a big deal of why she was gone. I mean, in her mind, I mean, I'd ask you this, Dua. Do you think Norma really believes that? Is she really, like, you know, what's the big deal? I was gone for 34. I was gone for like one day and everyone's freaking out thinking I was dead. I was coming back.
She's trying to downplay it because she's normally so over dramatic and over the top. It was kind of interesting to see her completely downplay this and make it seem like, I mean, it just shows how manipulative she is. She's like, what are you talking about? I left for a night. And Norman's like, well, you left with a suitcase. Like, you were going to be gone forever.
Right.
You know? And so she really is. She was, she played it kind of like the complete opposite as we're used to seeing Norma as like this, you know, over dramatic character. But yeah, a lot happened when she was gone though.
Yeah. And it was a while. And then she left in dramatic fashion with a suitcase and a gun. So I think there's
the better to shoot your phone with.
This cause for alarm.
It's great when she's like, goes, you know, the way she went last week, just, you know, just going extra dramatic, and now it's no big deal.
Yeah.
It was no big deal. 36
again,
hours.
Again, classic normal, right?
I just love when she turned the phone. I dropped it in the mud, and I'm like yelling at the TV, and shot it three times.
Yes, shot it, you know.
But, you know, the other thing I thought was, as a literary device, I really enjoyed how many times she said, you know, why does everybody think I'm dead? Like, because obviously we all know you're going to be. It's only a matter of time.
Right.
You know, that's like kind of the that's the creepy thing about all this prequel action.
There's some foreshadowing there?
A little bit, you know, because we all know where this lands, you know.
Sure. With her in the window. But, yeah, so I...
which we got to hang out with at Universal, which was fun.
Right. So, yeah, so, and also, I'm also very interested in Norman's sort of... this new Norman we're seeing now. I mean, now, we saw Norman last week go full Norma. We saw him, you know, have the, you know, blackout for hours at a time, as Dylan later said. But, like, when he's back with Norma, he's got this sort of, like... I mean, he's got this kind of swag going. I mean, how would you describe the new Norman, Nando? Like, how he, you know, when she's like, you know, look, Norman, what does she tell him? What does she tell him to do? Be a man, or like,
it's not being manly.
Well, she says, don't be a twit. His acting jealousness is unattractive.
It's not masculine and it's not attractive. Not and he goes, here I go, mother, following you.
With your purse in a masculine and attractive way.
Like, what do we make of this? I mean, I just want some psychoanalysis here from the panel. Like, what do we make of this new Norman?
What's he doing? He definitely has swagger. Like I said, he's got some swag, and he talks back. He's talking back to everyone. I mean, we saw what he did to James, and even before that, just taking the phone from Norma.
Right.
You know, like a jealous, you know, jealous boy.
But is that, I mean, are you reading this as, like, the emergence of this sort of guy who's got, who's, I mean, how are you reading this? You're reading this as a jealousy? Are you reading this as the new manly Norman?
Mad. No, I think he's mad. Like, did you ever get into a fight with your boyfriend or a fight with your girlfriend?
Yeah.
And the fight isn't really squashed, but you're going to have an attitude about other things. Like, I felt like that's what this was.
That's a good read.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does feel like the fight with the girlfriend or the fight with the boyfriend. I mean, yeah, that's a good read.
The fight's over, but they're not going to forget it.
Yes, that's true. And exactly. Well, that's why the relationship is so twisted up, right? Because it's not just mother-son. It's mother-son, boyfriend, girlfriend. It's everything to each other, which is why it's so bizarre.
Right.
And so interesting to watch. The other thing that's interesting to me, or one of the other things that I see with this whole thing, is it seems like Norma is trying to build Norman into a man by kind of getting him to do certain manly things, like trying to create a man like you would create a snowman by giving it a nose and giving it eyes, and now it's a guy.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not how you create a man, but that, you know, but seems to be that's the way they're trying to go about it. Let me have you do some manly things, and it seems like that's what Norman's doing. He's trying to put on the occasional manly behavior, like he was sitting on the couch, you know, go get me a beer, whatever. I've got this, mother. Go in the kitchen.
Right.
You know, and the same thing when he's talking to the shrink, he tries on some manly behavior. And it's like, it almost seems like we've deconstructed what manliness is. And instead of building it from the inside out, we're trying to like put it on him. You know, let's see if we can give you some toughiness. And it's coming out in this weird way.
But even him being a man, he's still taking on the mother persona. I still feel that with the whole conversation with James, even like, hey, we're a couple of guys, we could talk like this, but it's just obvious it's like his mother really trying to, you know, come out. And
I mean, I read it just in more character wise. Like, we have to be able to see Norman make this transition into someone who's capable of that kind of rage and the kind of rage that's going to allow him to be able to kill people and do the things that he does. I mean, like, you know, before in seasons one and two, you know, Norman's very innocent. He's very boy-like and he's very like, oh my God, I don't know what I did and how do I do it? We never actually see Norman really go into the rage to kill Miss Watson or go into the rage to kill these people. I mean, you know, it's always, you know, he blacks out and Lord knows what happens. Now we're sort of seeing him get to this point where he has this sort of inner rage and this inner anger. You can see this guy who may truly become a psycho. And I think that's what's interesting. That's what's coming out for me. Like this new Norman is like this guy with his chest puffed out who's able to really kick someone's ass, as we saw, you know, in the basement.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting, if I could just add to that, is, you know, in seasons one and two, he has to black out to do these things.
Yeah.
When he was downstairs with the professor, we didn't see that. He's just starting to flow in and out of that, out of that easily.
Right.
So I think you're absolutely right that he's going to turn into this person who can do this quite easily without having to have an excuse that he needs to black out, turn into his mom, his eyes go blank, whatever it is.
Right. It's really, 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 really scary. So, you know, let's continue on with the Norma part. We'll get back to Norma in a second. You know, she gets her phone back. She's going through these things. She sees the Romero got shot. She tries to call him, comes back to the house, and there Romero is, worried. And also another comical scene, she's also blowing him off, like, well, ugh, you're shot. Well, you look fine to me, or whatever she's saying. Like, he's like, I was shot. What went through you? Like, what's the big deal? Like, Norma, like, I thought, I'm worried about you, and you should be worried about me. How did you read that scene, Dua?
Well, again, it was Norma kind of downplaying. I mean, I was really kind of heartbroken that she didn't, it seemed like she just didn't care that Romero was shot. She's like, what are you doing in my house?
Yeah. Like, well, where's that coming from to you? Where's that coming from? Is this part of her dismissal or trying to downplay the whole thing and deflect? Or is she, I mean, why is she doing that?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. Okay. It was just fun for me to watch. I'm not quite certain. What I was thinking more about, actually, is this from Romero's perspective rather than from Norma's? Because, you see, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but you see a glimpse into the fact that Romero doesn't have a mother anymore, and his mother obviously killed herself, which is something that Norma talked about last episode.
Right.
So I was watching this because I watched the episode one time, and then I watched it again, and I was like, interesting how I can now almost see Romero's attraction to Norma based on his past, which is interesting because now I'm looking at it more from Romero's perspective, and he's not so shrouded in mystery. So from Norma's perspective, I'm not so sure. I think that it was just a lot of stuff coming at her at once, and it's like she was like, you know.
Well, and something to add to that, you know, she's got enough things going on. When he looked fine. I mean, it's not like he staggered in the door with the bullet in him, you know, I've been shot.
Right.
And she was like, you're fine. Right. It, you know, he was fine. You know, I remember years ago, I had an ex-girlfriend who got in a car accident.
Shot you?
Yeah, she did. She did. Oh. But it went right through me. It was cool. All right,
fine.
Yeah, but she was in a car accident, and I didn't hear about it for 3 days, and I only heard about it because she saw me. And I was like, oh, and I asked her about the car. And she was like mortified that I asked about the car, but I was looking right at her. She was clearly fine.
Right.
And so maybe there's a little bit of that. That he looked good. He looked like he was healthy.
That sounds like a very, very, very flippo moment.
It was. It absolutely was.
Hey, baby, how's the car? I mean, don't. God.
Sorry.
But no, it was. It's one of those ones that I've looked back up on many times and gone, well, I've never done that again. But he looks okay. He looks like he's healthy. And she's got a lot going on her plate. So, I mean, you know, maybe that's part of her dismissal.
Flippo, what you're saying is that there's a little bit of Norma inside of you.
I've just dismissed 14 different things I would have said back because we're on his show.
I'll say it. He wishes it reversed. That makes sense. But so Romero gets past all that and asks about the flash drive. Because obviously it's something dangerous. She says that, you know, my man Gunner has it and it's up in the thing. And he's going to go and do it. And I love that little throwaway line.
Oh, it was so great.
You know, like, what a stupid name. No, what kind of name is Gunner?
A stupid name. It was awesome. Two predatory older folks are like, this guy's an idiot. But I love that scene up there at the barn, too, where he's like, he's like, don't make me bash your head against the wall.
Don't let me go get the gun and I'll bang your head. I don't want to do that shit. He said, don't make me do that shit. Just
skip all that shit. That was great.
Let's just open it.
Just open it and get over it.
I believe Romero, man. I believe that guy. Again, Nestor Carbonell is doing a great job.
Nestor Carbonell is the truth.
He's the truth. I believe that guy is as tough as he seems and is. And I, you know, like don't let people get the gun.
Well, he whackified the other sheriff last week pretty good.
He whackified him. Oh. He deaded him very good. Oh,
and I love the way he delivered him, too.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant.
And by the way, maybe that was the sting. Was that the sting? Was that the Bates Motel
when,
thing? Delivery of the Marcus?
I thought that might, that's what I was saying before. I think that might have been two. I'm not sure.
Right. When Ted Shaw found him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about that, the very cool moment where Kevin Ram, Bob Harris goes out in this very Pacific Northwest.
Yeah,
like,
he did.
You know, like exercise gear,
North
like
face, yeah.
North Face, all like, ready to go, do his thing in this very cool, house.
Mm.
He's like, hey, you can't park there. And it's a message from Romero, which was very, very cool.
What did it say?
No, you officially withdraw my candidacy for sheriff.
Sure,
that was just really great. Really great. I mean, you know, that's great.
Now, so, do you think that Bob Paris knows exactly who that came from right away?
Of course.
Well, who else would it come from?
Of course.
What I think is hilarious, that scene and even the scene at the end of last week with Norma and Caleb, when Caleb's like crying at her feet, right. You know, kind of like what happened with Norma. Like, I was just gone for 36 hours. It's no big deal. Like, they dismissed both of those things in this episode. Like, yeah, whatever. Life goes on.
Yeah. He was
both of those things. Even Paris.
When he catches him skeet shooting and they're talking, he doesn't even bring it up. He's like, whatever.
Now, which is great. So Romero goes up. He does the thing with Caleb. He finds the opens the thing, sees that there's some names in the ledger that really are alarming to him. We know now that his mother's name is on this on the ledger. Now, presumably, the ledger is all the people who benefit from the town's profits in their illicit activities. And on this was supposed to be Romero's dad, who we now know as a crooked cop on the take. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's Romero's mother, which really just chaps him like to no end. So the thing on this ledger can take down everyone in the whole town and tarnish all these legacies, which Romero says good riddance to, except for the fact his mother is on there as well. Is that right? Duo, is there something more?
Well, I mean, I think that what this did was it opened a really, really big scab. And so I don't think that we really know the depth of it, but I think that it opened a wound for Romero that we're just getting the tip of the iceberg of.
Right.
And I loved, he went in to go confront his father about this, and I thought it was so interesting. The way that his father was acting was very similar to the way that Norma's been acting. You're overreacting. There were very similar choices that they made in how to handle, these scenes. And I just thought that was very poignant.
And also, I agree with that. Let me talk quickly about like his conversation with Ted, watching Batman and Bates at the same time is very a lot of Kevin Ram with Bob. He goes to see him skeet shooting, which was very cool. When he goes by the guy, another great throwaway line by Romero: "I'm gonna kick your ass one day."
I went back twice. To watch it.
I did too, actually.
It was so good.
But
I absolutely believed it too. He's come back.
And I gotta say, I do love Kevin Rams for chair of Bob Paris, because Bob Paris, he is unfazed by anything.
Absolutely. He's right,
every time Romero shows up with a look on his face like, "I know your secrets." Like, yeah, of course you know my secrets. Just get me the thing. Like, come on, Romero. We're boys.
We're still talking about this
shit? What are we doing? Like, give me the flash drive already, So I do love that. And it feels very much like two old friends, So really two old friends.
Well, and it seemed very much like two guys who have enough shit on each other. Like, dude, you know how this has to end.
Right.
I know it's cute that you're playing this out a different way, but this has to, we have to eventually come together and figure this out.
And this is one of my favorite dynamics between sort of like, hero villain thing. Very much like, I'm going to bring Justified. For Justified fans, the Boyd Crowder, Raylan Givens thing, like these two guys on parallel tracks, started at the same place, ended up on wrong sides of the law, but are friends kind of on parallel, on opposite sides of parallel tracks. That's really interesting storytelling to me. I like the idea of this, Bob Paris and Romero, these two guys who are sort of like really, really close and chummy, but really on the wrong sides of each other and still having to interact in this way. I think it's just interesting storytelling. I love their interactions.
Well, it makes their interactions so much more rich. Like, just think about it. If that wasn't kind of like the underlying factor, if these were just guys that were having an interaction and they didn't have a history, it would be kind of boring to watch.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So it's good. So that was cool. So then we see Romero go off and we see, Romero's dad who's in the can.
What kind of accent was that?
That's my question. I wrote that down. What was that accent, Dua?
It sounded like he was trying to be Irish and Italian.
But,
I think it was Irish.
But then.
What?
But his last name's Romero.
Romero.
I know. I think it was Irish.
What the heck is going on? All right.
I don't buy it. I think
it was. Didn't it sound kind
it
of
Irish? It sounded
Irish,
but I don't know. In my head, I'm like, was it Cuban somehow? I might not. I feel like, oh, it's Cuban. And he's like.
It was just, it was weird. I figured it was a little bit of a lot of things.
Yeah, I don't know what's
going
on.
Well, maybe it's not his real dad. Maybe it's his adopted dad. Maybe his real dad. Maybe that's why he's so upset.
All right. YouTube and iTunes, please help us out with Romero's dad's you know, ethnicity or at least the accent for that matter.
maybe he had to align with the Irish gang in prison, and he had to pick up the accent.
Right, it's a fake Irish accent.
Right. I mean, look, it happens. My friend Maya is Mexican, from Mexico, born in Mexico, raised in Australia. She's a very thick Australian accent. She's Mexican as can be. Hmm. So, I don't know. Well, the world's a crazy
I'm
place.
I'm sure it just adds to the mystery of this whole family.
Yes.
You know, if anything. I'm sure whatever choice it was perfect for everybody that was there.
So they had that conversation, like you said, Dua. I mean, he was very sort of like, you know, take it easy, Romero. But also, like, you referenced Norm, but also reminded me a lot of how Bob is acting, how everyone's acting towards Romero. Like, dude, you're all worked, even Marcus to a certain degree. Everyone's like, hey, Romero, you're all worked up over this whole thing. This is the town. This is the way things work. You know how this works. Shut up and relax. It feels like everywhere Romero goes, that's everyone's kind of telling them the same thing, which is like, hey, what are you so worked up about, Romero? You're part of this. Like, I mean, right? And is this new behavior by Romero? Why everyone seems to be so, you know, a surprise that he cares so much? Or I don't know.
Well, it seems to me like maybe we're crossing over. I mean, because there's been such a big shakeup, right? I mean, one of the big heavy hitters is gone.
Yeah, all the heavy hitters are gone. Yeah.
So the equilibrium has shifted. And whenever that happens, what power abhors a vacuum? So, I mean, business is still going to continue, right?
Yeah.
Someone's going to step in to figure it out. So Romero's job is to keep that relative peace, if that's how we've established his gig is, right?
Huh.
To make sure everybody gets along and the town continues to function and the feds don't descend on it any more than they already have, which
right.
is what happened that put him in the crosshairs in the first place. So, I mean, maybe that's what he's trying to keep a lid on who's going to be the new bosses.
Yeah,
I mean, didn't he ask Dylan to be a boss? Essentially,
yeah.
he came and said, "Hey,
yeah, you're in trouble now. Like, I'm going to keep my role." You know, then he kind of started the season by saying, "Look, looks like I'm going to take a more active role here because I don't know if you can handle this by yourself. Here's what we're going to do." And Dylan's like, "Nah, I'm out." So,
this is also an episode. Don't forget that this is the first episode where Caleb meets Romero. They hadn't met before this episode.
Yeah.
But of course, up at the roof, and he was like, "Oh, you're Norma's brother, right?"
Yeah,
and I had a glimpse for a second of like, "Oh dear, is it Romero that's going to end up killing Caleb if he finds out what he did?"
Right.
And if Romero and Norma like ever have a romantic relationship going on, and Romero finds out what Caleb did, like that might be the end of Caleb.
It sucks so bad that we're all like, you know, how's Caleb going to die? Like, I mean, it's all we're all in agreement that Caleb's not going to make it. Poor Kenny Johnson. But
he's so damn good in that role.
He's very good in that
role,
man.
Oh, my God.
He's really doing it. Like, you know, he has this sort of uncomfortable hands in his pocket, out of pocket. I'm Norma's brother. And by the way, I want to say I wrote this down, too. I've done a full 180 on Caleb. I had that whole rant about I don't trust this guy and I don't know if he's up to the right thing. Whether it's the performance by Kenny Johnson or my ice cold heart is melted, but I believe Caleb 100%.
He's so good.
Yeah.
I just think he's fantastic. And I absolutely believe, you know what's nice about it? What I love about it is there's no attempt to make it particularly masculine in the way he's just like the emotion comes to him, it hits him. And he just goes with it. That's how it appears at any rate. I'm not sure what he's doing, but it certainly feels that way. And I completely buy it. You know, some guys try to like, you know, like I've got, I won't mess up, but here's a single tear and I'll give you just the one. Yeah.
Right.
He's not trying that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's not trying that crap at all. He's like, no, I'm devastated, you know?
And he always his general disposition is this sort of like,
low status, screwed up.
I mean, it was the same with the Shield. I mean, Lim was very sort of sensitive and like, I don't know, Vic. Like, what are we doing, man? Like, you know, but like, this guy is a little, it's Kenny Johnson. It's a good performance. We like it a lot. I mean, I don't know. You like The Shield, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And Sons of Anarchy when he was on that, too.
And Sons. That's right.
Yeah. He's done a lot of great
Sutter,
stuff.
Kurt Sutter, right?
Yeah.
Also, his team with the Kurt Sutter was on The Shield.
Yeah.
All right. So Romero has that conversation. He goes, he's a dad. He then goes and gets completely shithoused, you know, as people do. And calls Norma to pick him up, which was very sweet, and she does. And then finally, you know, she tucks him in, and we finally almost have our big, you know, Normero moment. I really think it's going to go down, and they get nose to nose.
Do you think it's going to happen, or do you think they're just teasing it?
It's going to happen. I mean, I think that I remember. I don't know if this was the one, and I don't want any spoilers, but I believe Carrie was saying that they shot a scene between Romero and Norma that is so hot.
So hot.
And nothing happens. I'm like, oh, is that the one? So I don't know. But it was very cool, like, you know, to see them that close. And again, Norma was super sweet and genuine. And I really felt like, more so than I felt like with old Shrinky Poo, the doctor, that like Norma, they have this real emotion and feelings for these people. I love seeing them together. Yeah, too bad they're not going to make it either. But I love seeing them together.
What I love about this show is, you know, no one here gets out alive. Like, there's like one person who's going to witness the whole thing. Everybody else is toast.
Yeah. You know, one thing before we move from Romero that we kind of glossed over, I think it was kind of, I wouldn't say a throwaway line, but it's kind of hidden in there. When he was talking with his dad and he talked about how his dad said how Romero vilified him for the death of his mom.
Right.
But he also said she chose to go out that way. Which I'm guessing is hinting to suicide.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. That's what I picked up from it as well. That's why I thought that was such an interesting connection.
So yeah. I just feel
Norma
like...
mentioned suicide, and it seems like, you know, she was so unhappy that she killed herself.
Right. Because
he said, you drove her to it. You drove her to it.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, I just think that that's an important figure that probably gets a little bit into the psyche as well as how we get to understand Romero and this relationship even in general with Norma and even Norman.
Right. So let's go back to Norman himself. So, you know, Norman, you know, he's had a rough 36 hours, but he seems to be on the mend. He spent a lot of, I think Norman spent the entire episode in the basement, which is fine. He's down there now. What's somewhat disturbing to me is, you know, this whole taxidermy thing is, you know, it's great. His hobby is great, but
what is great about his hobby?
Well, look, he's got something to do, but like what's interesting is the evolution of the way
some people collect stamps. Some people collect slow
the books. Evolution of the way the looks on his face as he's doing what he's doing to the animals is really, it's just disturbing. You know, it's disturbing. We all know that, you know, all serial killers are, they start with, you know, pets and dogs and this and that and the other. So this is like, we're seeing, you know, the makings of, he's like serial killer 101, you know, but although he's not actually killing them, right? These animals first, he's finding them dead. Like how, when you taxiderm someone, is he going out and is he killing them and then doing it?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, we'd never seen him kill any of these animals, but
I'm obviously the dog he didn't kill, and you know,
but, I'm guessing he gets them somehow, or maybe he mail orders them Amazon.com. I don't know.
dead animals. Yeah,
something that's interesting. Did you notice the bird that he was working on?
No.
Well, I think, and I'm not. I could be totally wrong, but this could be a little Easter egg, but. The scene with Emma's dad and Dylan at the beginning of the episode, there's this big bird that's already stuffed in the background when he's talking. And I think it was the same bird that Norman was working on. It looked like some type of eagle or a large bird.
It looked like the same bird. Because he was pulling guts out of that bird.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I also think that it could be the bird. I mean, like, and this is, I'm really, like, not my, I don't have this, any of this in front of me. This is from my memory. But if it does serve me, my memory serves me correctly, I think there's a bird in the lobby of the base motel in the original Psycho. Yeah. I think that's the bird, right? The one, isn't it?
And I don't know if it's in the lobby. I think it might have been, you know, when him and the blonde girl were sitting and talking in that scene. I think that bird was behind him.
Okay, that makes sense. All right,
but I completely agree with you. I think that's a throwback to the movie.
Okay, yeah, that's what we'll find. I don't have that in front of me. I guess if there's only a device that I could look this up with, but
only.
So yeah, so Norman's he's really methodical and really pulling stuff out, which I don't enjoy watching that. You know, I don't need to see the cutting the bird open and the pulling out each, you know, gut by gut and piece by piece and really taking care of that. It's really disturbing. But anyway, so old Dr. McSensitive shows up, you know, to check on Norma. And
ooh, it's Dr. McSensitive. Thank goodness you're here.
Dr. McSensitive?
He's Irish.
Dr. McSensitive shows up. Check on Norma. I'm leaving.
Show me on the doll where Dr. McSensitive touched you.
I'm leaving a couple of very important parts out. Number one, we should talk about, like we touched on it earlier, we should talk about the, you know, Norman snatching the phone from Norma and answering the phone and seeing the name and getting really jealous and wondering who this guy is and like making the connection of what this is. And then also the conversation between Dylan and Norma where Dylan just goes to Norma and spills the beans. Like, hey, Norman's been blacking out. Like, yeah, so he blacks out. Yeah, dude, Norma blacks out for a long time. Yeah, well, people do that. Well, no, Norma needs help. I mean, I love the bit where she's like, it's like, are you going to lock in the house forever? She's like, maybe. You know? Like,
she was totally serious. She was totally serious. Like, that was a viable option. She's like, oh, maybe. Maybe I can lock them in the basement. Like, that totally serious.
Yeah, and then finally, it's like, he was dressed as you. He thinks he's you. She's like, shit. like that was the one.
I was really impressed with Dr. McSensitive with the way they wrote that scene.
Hold on, let me see the Dylan Norma scene.
The
Dylan Norma thing. So he's like, we need to get him help, which is a sort of a reoccurring theme here. Like, we need to get him help, right? Is that what Dylan said?
He needs help.
The boy ain't right.
He ain't right.
Yeah.
Right.
And yet Norma still doesn't call him.
No. And even when Dr. McSensitive goes running out of the house, she still did not put down the phone and call the sheriff and say, hey, what do we do? Is there a 24-hour lockup? My son has just attempted to kill the shrink.
Well, in all fairness, when she goes downstairs, he says, he said some horrible things to me.
He doesn't know. Norma doesn't know that they tried to kill the shrink.
And then that's one of those moments where you yell at the TV. Like, dude, stop and explain what happened.
Right. Your son had his hands around my neck, mm-hmm. and he tried to kill me. Like, I couldn't breathe. Go check him out. But before that, so the notion of that, like, you know, the doctor comes up, but this is, Norma is really trying. Like, Norma has, you know, Dr. McSensitive has gotten to Norma to a certain degree. So she is trying. Like, she says to him, you know, well, can you know about my son? You know, he's down there. Like, would you talk to him? Go talk to him. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I got this. I'm a licensed guy.
Have you seen my beard and glasses?
How bad can this kid be? What, the kid in the basement?
I got this.
You know?
You don't got this.
Yeah, so he
nothing
goes.
Nothing but net.
Yes.
Yeah.
He goes downstairs, and I just love this. I love the idea of him, you know, how it shifts. Like, he's really trying all of his best moves on Norman. And Norman just throws out the bomb, like, what was it like sleeping with my mother?
I was so impressed with the way he handled it. Because I'd have been like, now put yourself in Dr. McSensitive's shoes.
Right.
Like, you go downstairs to talk to the kid, you know, it's a little bit off. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't, what? No, I didn't. What? Like, I would, why would he, I didn't know. Okay, wait, no, that's not, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
What your mom and I, you don't ask questions. Why would you?
Yeah, he went straight to, he didn't go, he went straight to the, like, you know, Norman did the whole thing of, like, there's certain things that, you know, that I know about my mother. And I know that's true. But aside from the fact you could probably lose your license for that, like, he's throwing threats. Like, Norman was on point. Thank you. You know, Norman was on point with all of that. And frankly, McSensitive tried to really get in there and say, do you want to have sex with your mother? Like, what?
That's where he stepped on his crank. That was bad.
Yeah.
But I think, like, that's the question we all, but
he's like, why do you care?
Are thinking that.
And I'm glad, and kudos to, you know, Carrie and Carrie Aaron and the gang for actually getting to it and saying it out loud.
Yeah.
Someone had to say it. That's mm-hmm. a definitely someone had to say a moment, because we're all like, you know, do you want to have sex with your mother? And I think everyone was like, all know. And then he's like, Chokesville, right?
Right. But the thing was funny. I guess, I don't know about you guys, I'm yelling at the TV. Like, that's for your third or fourth session. You don't do that out the can.
Man. Well, and he knows dude's killed some folks. He's right. He's getting a load of this kid.
He's got his taxidermy knife in his hand.
Yeah,
the
he's got the scalpel in his hand.
I'd have been like,
bloody scalpel.
I think we should meet again.
Can I get your thoughts on that scene, Dua? What did you think of that whole sequence?
I thought it was a great, great scene. And I think that that's probably the last we're going to see of the doctor. What do you guys think?
I agree.
Yeah. There's like a doctor-sized hole in the wall. He's out, man. Doctor makes sense to have a cutout.
A doctor cutout with a cloud of dust. Looney Tunes.
I don't think there's enough room on that dinner table from the end of the episode for another one of Norma's possible suitors.
Anyway. I don't, but I really do. there may be something about... Maybe he comes back to sort of, because it's hard to say that he's gone forever, because he does actually know that Norman's a murderer. So I feel like we'll have to see him again, because Norma did confess to him that Norman.
I think he's also scared that Norman's going to rat him out, because he was afraid from last week. He was afraid that if he slept with Norma, it could mean his license. And Norman kind of hinted that.
How could it be his license, though? Because was he technically treating her, or was it because she's a student at the university? He teaches
Who knows? All the above. Mostly the patient. The patient, you know, doctor.
But he never, did he actually treat her at some point? He spoke to her.
He treated her. Right.
she never paid him. And I think that if she never pays him,
I don't know.
For his advice, I don't think it matters.
Someone help us with the legalities of this. But, so anyway, so that happened, and then very, very briefly, that was just a fantastic scene. And Norman came down to comfort him and says, "You wouldn't believe the things he said." Mm-hmm. You know, he said to me, and you know, and Norma comforted him. "I'll always be your mother. It's fine. I'm here," and they're always together. So that was kind of a sweet scene, but also ominous and creepy. Just really quickly, just want to go back and touch on the Dylan Emma situation, which I didn't think was going to happen, but I'm actually very glad.
I usually don't care about my predictions, but I predicted this.
And we're all collectively rooting for them, right? Yeah. Like, what's wrong with them?
Nothing, except that Norman's going to lose his collective shit. It's going to be a terrible. I just hope he doesn't kill Emma because she boinks Dylan.
Yeah.
Emma says, "This really amazing person wants to take me to dinner tonight and I want to spend some of whatever time I have left with him." I mean, that sounds like a date to me.
And that was a very sweet moment. Another sweet father-daughter moment. Because there was one of Mad Men last night. But there's a very sweet father-daughter moment here. And I like that. Like, you know, he said, "Don't think..." I forget what the line the father said. Something like, "I'm not..." After she explains himself,
she's, you know, "Don't think I'm letting you win this argument."
This doesn't mean you're winning this argument, but go ahead. And this is very sweet. Like, he's understanding in that moment, that's what she needs to do. Mm. That was very cool. But the Dylan Emma thing, and Dylan's very much heart on the sleeve. I mean, this Dylan kid, talk about your heart on your sleeve. This guy, man, he's really a sensitive guy. And I'm really loving his performances. What's my man's name?
Max Dua?
Yeah, Max Dua. Like, he's also giving some great performances. The looks, like the eyebrows and the looks in his face between, like, him looking at, you know, his dad and mom, between the way he thinks about Emma. I'll touch on it. You know, Chick comes around to offer the job back up, which you know, Caleb turns down, mm-hmm. Seems very nobly, you know, doesn't want to mess things up, which mm-hmm. is why I'm Team Caleb again. And Dylan considers it and wants to take it, and so it's really interesting to see if that job does go down. I have a feeling it will, because mm-hmm. Caleb later said, "I get it. Now that I saw her, I get it." Maybe they'll do it together, father son style.
That would be sweet. Well, he knows that Dylan is going to go, but he won't let him go alone because he wants to protect him. I could totally see that.
Yeah, we'll save that for predictions. But that was interesting, and so but it was cool that Emma did make it to the dinner, and then which brought us to the dinner, which was the Last Supper. Norma's making chicken marsala. Was it chicken marsala?
I think
chicken marsala.
Yeah, chicken marsala, delicious. One of my favorite dishes. She's in the back. She's snipping some oregano or some basil to finish it off.
Yeah.
And up walks my man Caleb with the flowers. How sweet is this guy? You know, he remembered the flowers.
Like, how sweet is this raping brother?
How is this rape guy rapes a sister?
When you're the raping brother, you've got to listen, rapey brother. You've got to bring the flowers.
He's the sweetest rapey brother I've ever seen in my life. So, I mean, I don't know. I do want to. What were our thoughts on this? The idea of this. This really dysfunctional but happy moment, Last Supper. I mean, do we have any thoughts? Your thoughts on the supper itself, and this calm before the storm? Because clearly, we touched on this at the beginning of the show, but this is the calm before the storm, right? This is the last time that they'll all be probably sitting there together,
alive
and happy. And you know why it's, you know, very ominously called the Last Supper. You know, I mean, what did you think of that whole situation, Dua?
I thought it was great, and San Filippo actually hit it right on the head earlier in the show, is that, you know, I think the expression on Dylan's face really summed it up all, and there was more said in the scene with the piano, with the non-dialogue, than there was, you know. And in fact, I think that whole dinner scene had no dialogue, am I correct?
Well, they had a big montage.
It was all music.
There. Yeah. Well, you know, And the other side of it was, as happy as Dylan was and as hopeful as Dylan was, Norman was just as nasty and pissed off as could be. When you're looking at the piano.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think, I love the title, I love the way it was shot. I love the very different views of everyone at the table. I love everyone sort of disappearing from the table and Norman left alone. And then, you know, of course, at the very end.
Which is how it's going to be eventually, all alone in that hotel.
Yeah, like that's also, very foreshadowing.
Yeah, foreshadowing is that eventually everybody that disappeared is somebody that will eventually die and Norman will be all by himself.
Yeah, so it's a very, very, very sort of foreshadowing moment. And then, of course, him sneaking up and sneaking into his mother's room, and she's dressed very, you know, maybe I won't say seductively, but you know, she's got her.
Let's say it's inappropriate for mom to be sleeping that way when there's no good reason.
Well, no, it's inappropriate, but you know, she's asleep and she's got her nighties on.
You know, your son has freaky weird issues.
Son has freaky weird issues, like he wants to come in and rub your ass while you're asleep.
I'm not going to try it. Whatever. I love it. if my one son comes to me and says, "Hey, my brother was dressing in your shit and pretending he was you," and then he's obsessed with mom. She knows that the touching thing is gone way too far for too long. She knows that. What the hell are you wearing a negligee to bed for? Wear some sweats.
Wait a minute. This is not Norma's fault. She was dressed appropriately,
you,
ready
Dua,
for her son to come spoon with her.
No, okay. Well, hey. All right. So that's
she
that.
Was wearing some spooning clothes.
So that was that episode. I want to. I don't know if we're going to do a news and gossip drop, but you know,
let's talk
a little briefly about last week. We had the wonderful opportunity to go out to the Universal back lot and talk to some folks. We went to the Base Motel open house, and we had a lot of fun. We had some drinks and some food and some good times and chats and walked around the sets and not the actual set of Base Motel. This was the set of the original movie Psycho that's on the University lot. For those of you who live in Los Angeles or have visited, you may have seen it on the back lot tour. We went and did that. And it was a lot of fun. I don't know.
Vera was there, and Carlton Hughes was there.
Joe did not lose his shit.
I did not.
A little bit.
Only because somebody had told her at some point that I was obsessed with her, which I think is unfair. I'm not obsessed with her. I'm obsessed with her performances. I think she's an amazing actress, but I'm not going to go to her house.
You know what I loved? I think she sounded like she knew us. She's listened to the show. I'm guessing Nestor and the publicists over there have alerted her to this show, so she has.
But how gracious were they? And I mean, she was. They were absolutely just wonderful, and they were so nice to us and hung out with us. And we had the love. Our talk with Carrie Ann was amazing.
My favorite one. My favorite. I feel like the most juice and the most stuff that I got was from the talk with Carrie Ann. And you know, I asked her a few questions, like, you know, do they still get their source material from Psycho? And she said. She said no, and she also said that, you know, I asked her if she already knew how the series was going to end, like if they knew how it was going to end, and she said that they knew how it was going to end emotionally, but they haven't written out yet, which I thought was really interesting.
Right.
Is that they know emotionally where everybody is going to be, they just don't know how to get there quite yet.
Right.
It was
a wonderful time. I had a great time.
Yeah, you can look it up on our Twitter feeds, and I periscoped up there. I was trying to periscope a lot up there, but we're up in the hills.
And it was great fun. Being on the Universal backlot on that tour portion, which if you're working over there, you don't usually get to hang out at. And it was so cool. I think Nando tried to drive onto the King Kong set.
I got lost. It's funny because they didn't do a great sign job with the signage driving on. They just kind of let you drive
on. Shots fired at NBC.
I wouldn't say shots fired. I missed the sign, and I ended up pretty much on the tram ride practically at the King Kong section, and I just turned around. Luckily, some employee helped me and got me there. But I got a free tour.
It was neat.
It was pretty cool.
Right. Shout out to a couple folks. Jonathan Knox. He has a prediction that Dylan will get hurt and be on the verge of death and give Emma what she needs. I mean, that's an interesting prediction.
That's a great prediction. So sweet. Dylan would be the one to do that, too.
Yeah, that's very sweet. And I don't know. I got nothing. That girl, you know, Melissa Marshall. And a few other folks. I'm just looking over 20 feet. Ali, thank you, Ali. And, Alex Farmiga. related to or not related
maybe,
to there.
Who knows?
Thank you again all for listening and downloading on iTunes. We don't say this enough, but please rate us on iTunes if you can. It really helps other people find us. But you guys have been fantastic with your ratings on iTunes and your conversation on YouTube as well. Please thank you very much for all those who follow us on Twitter and tweet at us and rate us and everything else. Predictions?
I got a prediction.
All right.
But no dropping.
There it is. And now,
you're after Buzz. You just need to wait for it, stupid.
Adua, what do you got?
Oh, can you do me last?
Oh, sure.
Oh, boy.
I feel like I'm at that party on.
All right. That's what my beer is. Never mind.
There it is. here's my prediction. I'll go. I think Caleb will do the drug run for Dylan. I think Caleb the gun run. Right. I think Caleb will do it for Dylan. I think Dylan's going to try and do it. I think Caleb's going to kind of do the old look over there and wang, and then maybe knock him into the van, knock him out. He's going to take the gun run, and then he'll give the money to Emma, and then he's probably going to die on the gun run somehow or another. I think that's how we're going to lose Caleb.
All right. I actually agree with that. I share that prediction. I agree with you 100% on that. The rare time the two Joes agree. Go.
I mean, I don't see... Cheers, there you go. I don't see Emma dying anytime soon, even though her dad makes it sound like her time's short, and she mentioned that. So either... But I don't think the gun run's going to go successfully either. So yeah. I'm wondering if there's something weird about about the father. I find it interesting that he's trying to keep Emma in kind of like... Norma tries to be protective of Norma. Like everyone's so protective of each other.
Well, I think we all agree the gun run's happening. You know, the gun run's happening.
I don't think it's going to be a success.
It will not be a success.
I don't think it'll be a success.
So we'll figure that out. Do yeah.
All right. My prediction is I think that the doctor, after his episode with Norman, I think the doctor is going to have to go to the cops. Have to go to, and what is that, Sheriff Romero at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. 100% Sheriff
and
Romero.
And so he doesn't know the relationship, and so now Romero is going to be clued in on exactly what Norman's deal is.
I love that prediction.
And then that's going to be, and I think that the way he reacts to that is going to bring Norma and Romero closer together.
Right. I'm trying to figure out for me what, like, there's going to be the Norman reveal. Norman needs something to do. I mean, we've explained away Caleb on this heist, maybe. We've explained away the doc. But Norman's got to kill somebody. So I don't know.
Maybe he'll kill Bradley because Bradley's coming back.
Oh, it's Bradley.
They keep saying that, but
I don't know.
The thing is, so she has to come back for like one season. Maybe she comes back and Norman kills her.
All right. We'll see. Maybe it's a flashback. Maybe she gets in the
show.
You
know what? Maybe what happens to get Bradley back, it's going to happen when Dylan and Emma start getting it on, maybe. And Norman gets a little jealous, and that's when Bradley comes back.
I wonder if we're going to really get a shower origin story. I wonder if we're going to add, like, this is why he, like, if there's going to be a shower thing. We'll
so, like,
see.
The first ring.
Yeah.
The pre-ring.
Oh, I think
ring.
That's, like, season four material, though.
Don't you think? I think so, too.
I agree. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Dua. Thanks for joining us on the phone. Where can the kids find you, Dua?
At Dua Casey, DuaKaissi, on Twitter.
Oh, wonderful. And Joe Flippo, where can the ladies and the gents find you?
On the Twitters, it's Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo. And then my website is josephsanflippo.com.
And the very handsome Nando Vell, where can they find
thank
you?
Thank you. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nando Vell, NandoVell. And, of course, here doing after shows for other shows.
Yes. And you can find me at Joe K. Brazzo on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week for episode 8 of Bates Motel. See you then.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.